with Vow and Declare on the inside, then Prince of Aaron, Raymond, Tusk, Finch. It's Master of Reality. Vow and Declare up on the inside. Vow and Declare, Prince of Aaron is lifting late with El Paradiso. Master of Reality just in front. Vow and Declare kicks. Vow and Declare's won it for Australia. They're on top of the world.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Trainer's Heart. I'm Todd Blum, your host here in the Sport Thought Studios. Thank you for tuning into the show again this week. We've got another big show planned. Seamus Mills Bloodstock is going to join me on the line in a moment with everything that's going on in regards to the English sales and no Victorian participants, whether they be buyers or vendors, are allowed. So we'll have a chat to Seamus, obviously being a Victorian Bloodstock agent, one of the leading agents in the country too for that matter. So I'll have a chat and see what his position on that is. I'm also excited to have a bit of a chat to him about his mating process. They're one of the leading agencies for matings and broodmare purchases, with the headline act being last year's Melbourne Cup winner, Vow and Declare. And then we'll be back to wrap up here in the Trainer's Heart. But for now, we'll head to Seamus Mills, who's been good enough to join me on the show. Seamus, thanks for joining me in the Trainer's Heart.
Welcome. Anytime, Tom.
Now, there's been a bit of disruption in the sales season as it would normally be this year. 2020's, it's been very different. The English Easter 1 was an online auction only. Easter 2 is going to happen this Sunday in New South Wales there at the English Complex in Sydney, but you're not going to be there.
No, unfortunately not, along with anyone else south of the border. Us poor Mexicans missing out this year. You know, it's a real shame. I actually did have a couple of nice orders for the sale, which obviously is always a shame to, you know, to not be able to fill them. But look, rules are rules, and unfortunately we'll be missing out.
A thought you wrote on Twitter a couple of days ago, Seamus, was in regards to the border crossings, that it makes sense for a 24-hour negative test to be dependent on crossing the border. Do you think that Racing New South Wales could have done a bit more, maybe something along those lines, in order to get the Victorian participants up to what is going to be a couple of major sales in this period of time?
Yeah, look, my understanding is that, you know, time sort of cruelled the deal. You know, by the time the announcement sort of came through from Racing New South Wales, and obviously got together with Inglis, and, you know, they worked on it workshopped it between each other. You know, my understanding is that time just ran out to be able to organise something that was acceptable to everybody. Look, I'm on this side of the fence, so therefore, of course, I'm going to say that you know, perhaps more could have been done. I sort of think with every aspect of these sales, you know, whether it be quarantines, COVID tests, whatever you want. Look, I think we're all trying to get back to a stage where we can do business. I think it seemed like a fairly quick and rash decision, given that we have had a long time living with the COVID restrictions and so on. For us not to be in a position to accommodate any Victorians.
Will you still be active at the sale via the online platform, Seamus, or have yourself and your clients sort of going to steer away from it now?
I think we'll steer away from it. I just can't buy horses without having seen them in the flesh, you know, and obviously there was no, at any stage, there was no suggestion that I wouldn't be able to see them in the flesh. So therefore, what do? You know, obviously planned on being there. Everyone else planned on being there, but just can't. I haven't seen these Victorian wheat-based weanlings. You know, it's a real, obviously, you know, once again, it's, you know, where you point fingers or anything else is a different matter, but obviously it's a great shame for all the Victorian vendors. I mean, I had so many phone calls the other day asking me to come and have a look at Victorian-based weanlings before they potentially went to Sydney. And that was just, that was impossible, given the time frame and of this sort of, you know, of the notice that we wouldn't be able to attend. So I really do feel utmost, most and for all, feel for Victorian, for the vendors in Victoria.
It does seem really odd that even the vendors can't go up there. And like you say, the weanling and yearling sales, which is the sort of sales that Inglis are going to feature in the next couple of days, they really are, you know, you buy weanlings and yearlings on type. If it was a broodmare sale or something like that, it'd be a little bit different, but it really is at a loss for buyers to go in buying blind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, pin hooking is all about the animal. Well, in fairness, buying yearlings to race is also. I base everything, I suppose, you know, you base everything in terms of buying a horse around type, and then you work out what you've got to pay for it on pedigree. So, look, it's just absolutely imperative. And I personally think that you only need to look at the results of online sales. You know, they have been fantastic, absolutely fantastic to clear horses, and the clearance rates have been great. But if those prices are the new norm in the market, we're going to see one of two things. We're going to see service fees need to be halved, or we are going to see breeders absolutely leave this market in droves. I mean, to the point where if those online prices are the new norm, for I would suggest any more than about a year or two, I could see the whole industry almost crashing.
Yeah, and I think personally, from my point of view, I think the service fees are one thing in particular too for the breeders, particularly the smaller breeders. And we had Adam Sangster on the show previously and said that the, you know, majority of breeders are made up with people that only have one or two mares, that the service fees probably needed to come down a little bit too. I think they were getting a bit extreme.
Yeah, look, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm sort of taking the off topic a bit, but I mean, I'm in total agreement and said I think that the economic impact of COVID and on breeders has been lost, and people are talking about you selling these foals in 3 years' time, which is fine, other than the fact that if the online prices of weanlings, yearlings and mares in foal are anything to go by, the vast majority, and I haven't done the stats, but I would say in the 80s or 90 percentiles, have not made service fee for those stallions. And we've seen a lot. It's not a small sample. We've seen a lot of weanlings go through, a lot of yearlings, a lot of mares in foal. And if you're talking, you know, 80 or 90% of those horses not making service fee, you don't have to be Einstein to work out. If that continues on as the new norm for more than 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, that's fine. The breeders are not selling their 2020 conceived stock for 3 years. Well, they won't be in the game anymore. They'll be gone. So that's fine to say you'll attract that service fee this year, but no one will be happy if all these blokes are completely missing from the game in 3 years' time, and that is the reality of the service fees you set this year. Not the fact that someone's selling in 3 years' time, but the fact that they need to survive for the next 3 years.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note also that the horses, or the stallions, whether they be the covering stallion or the sire of the yearling or weanling, whatever it may be, they are top-line stallions. So the quality of bloodstock that's been offered online has, you know, dramatically improved recently. So it's not just that middle market or lower market stallions where they're trying to get them online as a bit of a reduction or something like that. It actually is that A-grade yearling or weanling, and they're not getting a good enough return.
No, that has been the case. You know, look, obviously, you know, you're talking about some of these sales featuring 400, 500, 600 lots. Obviously, there is a mix of bloodstock, and there are people at all levels. But even at the higher level, as you say, people are struggling for return. There's been, particularly in a couple of the later sales, there's been some, you know, very well-bred, well-related, nice young mares, good sorts, owned and being sold by professional operations, involved commercial stallions, that, as I say, are making prices that would just make the any breeder turn their back on the game in the next couple of years if that is the new norm.
Hopefully that's not the case, but we look forward to following it in the future. Just on the online platform, Seamus, we've seen the constant growth, like we've just discussed, of the numbers and Magic Millions, who, as a company, was a bit reluctant to go to the online platform. They've done a couple of linked up with a couple of farms and done some online sales. Do you think that is more the way of the future, having these online auctions, or do you think it's still going to continue as it was probably pre-COVID?
I think my personal belief is pre-COVID. I say that for a couple of reasons. One is because certainly in my client base, there has been very little interest in the online sale platform. And the reason being, in terms of being buyers, the reason is consistent, and that is access to seeing the horses. Now, obviously, they come online. Yes, you could get on a plane, fly around, and maybe without COVID restrictions, maybe you would get on a plane, you spot something online, you would get on a plane, you would go and see it. And so those restrictions around travel or leasing of those restrictions might see an increase in some trade there. But I still firmly believe that it's the lesser end of the market that is happy to buy these horses online, and I don't think that people are going to start trading, the really good bloodstock online while you'd have to do a lot of groundwork to see one or two horses you're interested in versus going to a sale complex and being able to see, hundreds in the same period of time, and that's the reality of also these online, the online situation. I mean, for the Easter 1 yearling sales, we spent 4 days on the road, probably to inspect around about 50-60 horses, and then for the chairman sale, where they were sort of even more spread out, and obviously farms had, one or two or three or, fairly limited numbers in each sale.
Yeah.
I spent 4 days on the road and inspected about 38 horses. Well, on a sale complex, I'd normally get through 20 an hour. So you're talking about 4 days on the road to look at those chairman's horses versus what would be 2 hours worth of inspections on a sale complex. So I think the logistics of them mean that they'll never rival a live auction. I think that from a selling point of view, you don't get those competitive tensions online when you are sitting there watching a clock sort of wind down versus the action of a sale complex with the auctioneer, threatening to drop the gavel at any time. So I think it's for quite a few reasons, the online platform is a wonderful platform to cater for a certain market. And for me, that is that market that for years I certainly spoke to, sales companies and so on about how I thought it was completely unnecessary for a large percentage of the, mixed sale horses to be taken out of their paddock, taken to a sale complex, walk through a ring, make $600, $1,000, $1,500. I think it is absolutely fantastic that those horses find new homes. I think it's fantastic that we have people interested in our sport and in our industry to pick up horses at every price point. But the reality is a lot of those horses either pass in, go home, or they're at a level whereby they don't need to be dragged out of the paddock and sent off to a sale complex. They can trade and find new homes online. So I'm a massive advocate for the online platform. But as I said, I just can't ever see it rivaling live sale auction.
Yeah, and I suppose too, being a bloodstock agent, going to those sales, and that's where you do your networking with whether it be farms or potential clients. And I mean, even me when I started up Toblon Bloodstock, just going to sales, and whether it be Queensland, Sydney, or even Melbourne, and just actually getting out and talk to people like you and I met at a sale.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, there are so many, you know, I think that is the reality, and I think that'll be the really interesting thing for me as far as these upcoming Magic Million sales go. You know, as I mentioned before about the necessity for these online prices not to become the new norm, and the main thing around that is I'm hoping that this you know, the return to live action at these Magic Million sales will mean, you know, the guy is off the farm, first time in 4 months, seeing his mates, staying in a hotel, having a beer, looking at horses in the flesh, not flicking through a computer screen, doing business the way that they've been doing it, you know, for years and years and years, something they feel comfortable and familiar with. And I really think it's imperative for the market to find a return to, you know, some sort of competition and reasonable prices for bloodstock. And hopefully that sort of return to a live sale platform will provide that stimulus.
We sort of changed direction here slightly, but still on the sales stuff. So you attend all major sales, not only here in Australia, but overseas as well. Just how much has these travel restrictions and these other disruptions affected your business?
Look, so far, touch wood, it's been minimal. I think the uncertainty of pricing has been the biggest issue around our trade, and that is if we've got a nice horse to sell, those we pitch it to want to buy it for, you know, 70% of its value, and if we're trying to buy horses, it's also been difficult, obviously, with travel restrictions and going to see them and so on. There's obviously been, you know, a lot of people reluctant, I suppose, to spend money in the with an uncertain sort of economic, you know, climate. I do think it's really interesting that, you know, when you look through the buying list of these online sales and you compare those to, you know, the buyers list of the last, say, couple of Magic Millions national sales, you know, the mere buyers that would buy at Magic Millions have not been active at all in the online platforms. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether those sort of people are, you know, waiting for a live sale sort of to get back in the market and to be able to see these horses, yeah. or whether they've basically just you know, sort of turn their back on buying bloodstock for the year. So there's definitely been, I think, across the board a reduction in trade, and it just seems to have quieted down. This time of year for me is very busy with matings and booking mares and working out where we're going for 2020. So at this time of year, you know, I guess the sales platform, okay, it's been quiet, but the mares and foals are still to come. Still got reasonable orders for the sales coming up in Queensland. So I couldn't answer yet as to how this year will compare to others on the buying and selling front. Certainly as far as breeding mares, it's been the same. I haven't had any of my clients say they're not going to breed their mares this year. But in saying that, I think everybody's sort of looking at dollars, looking for value. On the sales side, so far it's been a bit more quiet. But with a couple of major sales to come, hopefully that'll sort of level itself out.
Well, you mentioned the breeding season there and leading up to it, and it's a pretty busy time for you. I wanted to ask you about that because the last 3 years, Seamus Mills Bloodstock has purchased or mated the dams of 12 stakes winners, and that includes the big one, Vow and Declare. So it must be a very exciting time of year for you.
Yeah, look, it is, and I think I sort of a few years ago changed direction a little bit as far as our matings go. And put a lot of time and effort into getting those matings right, you know, really written results over the last little bit. Obviously, you know, Vaughan Declare being a headline act, but, you know, there's plenty of results in behind them in, you know, Group 2 level and so on. It's been really pleasing. Thankfully, it's been spread across all the different clients, so the luck's fortune, you know, for everybody. And, yeah, it's something that I actually really, really enjoy now, is the mating side of things and really trying to get that right. You know, change a few things around, spend a bit more time, sort of being able to get them right. So, yeah, look, hopefully we've got, I think we've got, you know, from a client's point of view, just a super group of yearlings to go to the sales next year, and hopefully the market will still be there for them.
And what I noticed as well too, there's a nice spread of stallions. It's not just six Schnitzels and six Iron Invincibles. So obviously, Vaughan Declare being by declaration of war. Can you share with us a little bit of the process that you go through with your matings?
Yeah, so look, each mare's a little bit different, you know, and I'm a big believer in sort of what you're trying to achieve in the mare with the mating in the first place. So really the first question I sort of ask anyone who's interested in some help with their matings is what they're trying to achieve, you know, if it's commercial results. Whether they plan on keeping the mare long term, whether it's try and breed a good horse. I mean, obviously, if you're just trying to breed a good horse, you need to look a little bit. You can look a little bit beyond the commercial result. I think Vaughan Declare is a prime example. You know, like the client was keen to breed a commercial horse, and obviously Vaughan Declare was offered the sales, but he was also passed in and. The client's instructions were sort of at the time really was to try and set the mare up. He wanted to own her long term, and you know the matings for him were okay. If I sell them, cool, but if I don't, that's fine. We'll back the mare in and we'll keep them. So you know, just knowing what you want to do with the mare or do with the mating first is paramount. And then look, for me, I've been obsessed by pedigrees, you know, for a long, long time. For me, then it's a matter of getting the pedigree right, and that gives you a limited number of stallions to look at, and then you can shuffle those down through, you know, geographic location, price, you know, service fee levels, and what your client's budgets are. And it's amazing when you just sort of put them through the filter, how often really only one or two horses are still standing at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Rick Jamieson, who's regarded as probably one of the best breeders in the country, often you see his draft at yearling sales and you think, oh, it's funny that he sent that mare there, and then it turns out that, you know, they win a really nice race. You know, Jamaica, My Boy Charlie... Black Caviar, obviously the big one was by Bella Spree, who wasn't super fashionable. So like you say, if you're just trying to breed a racehorse, that sort of commercial value will come in the end anyway.
Yeah, and I think certainly from our point of view, you can have your cake and eat it more so now than the perhaps, you know, in the past, or perhaps that I gave credit to in the past. We, as you said before, I think, you know, a lot of those stakes horses we talk about, or you know, been lucky enough to have something to do with, they're not by expensive stallions, most of them not being by expensive stallions. And over the years, I've sort of admired you know, people like Stuart Ramsey, or as you say, like Rick Jamieson and so on, who've managed to produce Harry Perks. You know, they've managed to produce these good horses. You know, by stallions which are middle of the range stallions or young stallions, you know, unproven yet, and those you know, what I see as a very admirable trait, and something certainly that we would like to try and achieve, is for these good breeders, they seem to have a knack at producing the best racehorse by a particular stallion. Sometimes, you know, and not overly, but long-term proved to be overly successful. Now, you know, I would say so far we've produced the best, say, horse by Bull Bars, or the, you know, one of the better horses certainly by Epaulette with our matings. And you know, that's sort of something that I guess we're trying to strive towards, because I've seen those really good breeders do it.
Well, I've had a share in a declaration of war, and she wasn't as good as that one either that you've got, so there's another one.
Yeah, look, I guess he's up the list, I suppose, on declaration of war, and as I said before, that is, I suppose, what we're trying to achieve. And, the pedigree side of things, the only difficulty, I would say, and I'm getting off topic a little bit here, but the only difficulty I'd say would be that, I think in a lot of ways that the stallion booking process goes against all principles in trying to breed a good horse. And I say that because the stallion fees are announced and everybody goes clamming around for as many noms as they can in all the good horses, the commercial horses. And these bookings and matings and so on are done in a time frame that just is not in the best interest of actually breeding the good horse. Because if you are seriously sitting there and doing your matings and trying to come up with breeding a good horse rather than just trying to breed a sale horse, it takes time. And if you have quite a few to do, like we do, there is no way in the world that you would get them done by the time these stallions have the book full sign hanging on the door. So everybody goes clamoring in for the commercial horses. They're book full, and then you just put that meter there and that meter there and that meter there. Well, as I said, in my opinion, that doesn't produce results as long term. It may produce a result in a sale win, but not to breed a good horse.
It's a bit more like buying a bottle of wine on the price tag rather than the actual taste of it.
100%, and I think, I think it doesn't help the breed, doesn't help the stallion either, Obviously, you'll see those few stallions, I'm Invincible and so on, that manage to upgrade any old mare and they end up where they are because of it. But for most stallions, that's not the case. And I do think if you had, if you're given more time to do your matings, I think we could really increase in. I mean, I personally think that the breed has diminished since the heyday, in my opinion, the heyday of sort of 92 and, late 80s and 90s. And I think a fair bit of that is to do with the ever-growing commercial nature of the business, rather than the desire to breed a good horse. And when you think back amongst all those, Beau Rogues and Citizens and Superimposers and Betterloots and Ups and so on, they weren't by the absolute, top shop stallions of the time. I just think, obviously, with the way that the system works now, it is all about the commercial appeal and, unfortunately, not enough about trying to breed a good horse.
It's funny you say that, because I was only thinking a little bit earlier today about some of the best horses that I'd seen. There was something on Twitter and I thought Lonro was up there, and I thought, how good was it that he was able to continue to race on for as long as he did, and he still won a champion, was still a crown champion sire later on. He's still been a very good stallion, but how good it was that he was able to race in all those races over a couple of seasons. He had a crack at a couple of Cox plates and he still got there in the end as a stallion as well.
Yeah, look, once again, as I say, I guess it is just this continued commercial appeal. I don't begrudge colt owners from sending these horses off the stud as 3- and 4-year-olds, while their records still look good, and to a certain extent they've still been, well placed and hidden from the best competition. I don't begrudge them all at all, because there is a commercial aspect that you need to, abide by, and if you want to keep breeding, well, you need the funds. So I don't begrudge them that at all, and I think that I still think those horses could go off the stud early, and there would still be we'd still be able to utilise them and produce good horses for the future, and to get it and to produce, race horses and continue for the breed to be the number one priority when trying to breed good horses. I just personally think that there should be a system whereby, you know, service fees are released on the 1st of April. By the 1st of May, you need to have submitted your mare. By the 1st of June, you're told whether you're in or not. And then if you're not in, then by the, you know, by the 15th of June, that you submit your mare somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the system will work very much like a tertiary, you know, tertiary education acceptance system, you know, and that would give people time to choose the right mare for the right stallion, the stallion owners to get the best possible book for their stallion, and for more people to be able to try and breed a good horse. But as I say, this sort of clamouring for noms the day they come out, you could never convince me that's good for stallions or good for the breed in general.
Yeah, it's quite a interesting thing there. I don't mind that idea. While we're talking about stallions, Seamus, bit of a two-part question here. So who are some of the stallions that are, they're either, you know, they're early in their careers or they've just got their first yearlings or weanlings that you're excited about? And then second part, who are the freshman stallions going to stud this year that, that you'll be suggesting to clients?
Yeah, look, the the second part first. As far as the first season size go this year, I think it's a nice crop without being absolutely over the moon, you know, racing into any of them. So I think it's a, you know, it's a nice sort of even sort of crop. As far as the horses, you know, the youngest sort of horses, look, I don't know if you put Tornado in the young horse category.
I guess he has had
a couple go through, but he's a horse that we sent a lot of mares to last year, sending a lot of mares back to again this year. You know, it is difficult. I think it's commercially a little tricky with some of these Victorian horses, given the overall perception, you know, in the marketplace, can take a little bit more convincing to get them on, get them on the radar of some of the trainers and buyers and so on north of the border. But look, I just think he's a horse of tremendous value, has been now, and look, I think that interestingly, I suppose that, you know, that high chaparral sort of sire line at the moment, you would say, outside with Dukes, is the preeminent, you know, sort of a sire of sires, sire line in the country. You know, you could certainly argue that, you know, that his sons are doing better than the sons of a lot of the real champion stallions of previous years, of, you know, recent years. So, yeah, I think he's, I think Tornado will get a very, very good horse and is a very good stallion. I think he's perhaps been the victim of a few of his better horses going overseas, which has made it tricky, I suppose, for a few of those horses to sort of get on the radar. But yeah, look, he's also got a lot of time for it. One of the younger horses, I guess. I think Victoria at the moment has got some really good go.
Do you think that perception of the Victorian stallions is slowly changing? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that a Victorian stallion wasn't really commercial to New South Wales at all, but horses such as Tornado, do you believe that that's slowly changing and they're becoming more commercial, you know, north of the border?
Yeah, look, I do. I think, that... When I sort of started in the game, Victoria was going through a little bit of a heyday. You had Dan Zero, Flying Spur, Testa Rossa, Daniel Dancer and Costa de Largo. You know, all these horses came through the ranks. And the Victorian breeders all were up in arms when they left for New South Wales. But, look, none of us can invent cash or print it, but the reality is that we could never expect that those horses were going to stay in Victoria when we had no equity in them. And the difference between that sort of surge and what's going on at the moment is that the Victorian farms have got equity in these horses. And I know we saw Written Tycoon go to Arrowfield, but so many of these horses have their ownership base based in Victoria. And if a lot of these young horses are going to work, they're going to stay in Victoria. And I think that's the difference this time around, is that, you know, when we have that investment in them, you know, even obviously with the horses that Dali has stood in Victoria, I think there's been a, you know, with Blue Point coming this year, obviously Brazen Bow going well, and then obviously, you know, obviously you're longer investing. And I just think that, you know, that some of the horses that say that Dali have brought to Victoria are showing that newfound respect. And I do think it's changing slowly. I mean, I can see, you know, obviously a horse like Written Tycoon, you know, it's an interesting one that, you know, obviously John Massaro has been, you know, hugely successful in producing stallions and so on. I thought it was a really interesting sort of horse for him to pick up. You know, you've obviously got Rich Enough, Capitalist, Winning Rupert, all at stud. It wouldn't take much for Written Tycoon to become to really go to a new level as far as his sale ring success, and particularly on colts, although obviously his fillies have sold well, and I've been a big fan of them. But yeah, I mean, if he suddenly becomes a sire of sires, they'll come for him from everywhere, you know? And this is, I suppose, what I can see with all these farms in Victoria. I mean, Toronado, Poissons de Lune, I think Star Spangled Banner's exceptional value. Excuse me, Seamus Awards going well. Then obviously you've got some new horses. Next you have Tagaloa. Obviously Blue Point's, you know, coming down to Victoria. I think perhaps falsely in the past it's been called an exciting time, and I genuinely think that this time round we do have real reason to be optimistic.
I think Written Tycoon going up to Arrowfield might be one of the biggest masterstrokes that the breeding industry's seen, because when he started up in Queensland and he really started hitting his straps, and then he came to Victoria and he raised the bar again. I think serving some of those Arrowfield and co-mares, like you say, he's going to raise that bar again, which is already pretty high, but it's certainly, if it goes higher, then, yeah, like you say, he could be right up the pointy end.
Yeah, well, look, obviously, you know, the bigger farms like Arrowfield are trying to produce those sire lines. Obviously, got Dundee, and then they're happy to stand Castelvecchio. You know, now they've obviously got Written Tycoon, you know, obviously going to support him fairly heavily. I imagine they'll end up with and racing and in some of his sons. So I'm assuming that it was a strategic sort of purchase to get that horse and then potentially stand some of his sons down the track. And look, as I say, obviously it's, you know, shame he's gone up there, but well, from a touring point of view, but obviously Woodside do have equity in the horse, and you know he's going to get an increased chance. But I do think it's almost still a positive thing in terms of a you know, Victorian point of view, and that a horse like that would go up to, you know, the Hunter Valley and show his wares up there. I think you know, that I think Victoria will have more of these horses now with the investment they're making. And look, whether they end up in the Hunter or not, as I said, I think there's a real genuine number of good horses that can make their voice heard in the next few years, which hopefully, as I say, will really sort of put Victoria back on the map. But we won't have that lull given their ownership basis is in Victoria also.
Just before I let you go, Seamus, someone's listening to the show. They might have a mare that they want to pick a stallion for, or they might need a hand at a sale or something like that. How do we get in touch with you?
Oh, easy, mate. They can just give us a call. My website is, all the details are on there. It's just uh, mills.bloodstock.com. Someone asked me the other day, what name do you trade under? And I said, Seamus Mills Bloodstock. It took me hours to come up with the name. and the website is just smillsbloodstock.com. We'll try to keep it simple.
Beautiful. Thank you for coming on the show, mate. Appreciate it.
Welcome anytime, Todd. Enjoyed the chat.
Seamus Mills there joining me in the trainer's hut, and he spoke very well there, Seamus. A couple of very good ideas, and like I said, off the top of the show, right at the forefront of the agencies in Australia when it comes to matings and pedigree analysis and things like that. So a couple of very interesting points that might be the way forward in regards to booking a stay in and things like that, which might give us something to follow here in the trainer's hut. And we might even touch base with him in a little bit and a few other breeders and see if we can come up with something that could work for the system. But that's it for this week's episode. Thank you for joining me here in the trainer's hut. I'm Todd Blum. You can find the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, subscribe and follow. Leave us a review if you're that way inclined. Love to hear from you. Get in touch with us on the Twitter at Todd Blum Bloodstock is the handle there. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Search at SportThought, which is the website that we bring the podcast to you on, which is sportthought.com.au. There's a sports blog there and a couple of other podcasts, sporting podcasts that you'll have access to there. Thanks again for joining me. I'll see you next time in the trainer's hut. I'm Todd Blum. See you next time.